What are we again, folks? Okay. Shh. All right. Hello and welcome to the Fox Rugby World Cup podcast. This is the fifth episode. Who would have thought, Steve?
Well, I always had confidence we'd get to number five, Drew. What I didn't expect was the previous four to be so damn good.
Yeah, they are bloody good, aren't
they? And I didn't think we'd be able to top our guests from last week, Brian Abana and Maa Nonu, but we've managed to do it again, Drew.
We have. We've got a couple of big dogs coming on today's podcast.
I'm not happy about one of them, but we'll get to that later.
Yeah, well, why don't we just tell everyone who it is that they're going to be listening to? One is New Zealand. Actually, just had a recent movie made about him called The Perfect 10.
Oh, my God, of course he did.
I know. And he played himself. Like, who does that as well? Like, it's Dan Carter, none other than Dan Carter, DC10.
Unreal.
DC10 is also, interestingly, quite a big nightclub in Ibiza.
And interesting you know about this.
Yeah, I had some loose times there. Anyway, and the other guest is another 10 that's not so bad either. Johnny Wilkinson.
I don't know if I can talk to him. 2003, 2007... All of my lowlights as a spectator and a player came against him.
Yeah, but I think people want to hear him, mate.
Oh, well, you might. Okay, we'll cross that bridge when we come to it.
Because, like, we've got to understand, Steve, we are global, mate.
We've gone
we
very...
We are global.
Like, I thought we were kind of like our Tarm and St. Leonard's. That was our reach, but
well,
we're everywhere.
Eastern suburbs, because, yeah. You know, that's where we're both from. Yeah. But, no, mate, we are genuinely global.
It's exploded.
Unofficially, we're at the top of the charts for the best podcast in the world.
That's what I heard.
Yeah, so... Anyway, we've got to cater to all.
What do you think of week two of the Rugby World Cup, Drew?
Mate, I think it's fantastic. The action that's happening on the field is unbelievable. The colour all around the grounds and the fact that every stadium, I think, at the moment, like up until now, has been sold out. Like for every game.
Ticket sales are at 95%.
Is it?
Yep.
Wow.
Don't think we've had a World Cup anywhere near that.
Yeah, before. And just how much they're getting into it. Like they're all dressing up. They're in team colours. I'm actually a little bit jealous.
Yeah, well, I snuck up there for a day.
Yeah.
When I say snuck, I did tell my wife and kids that I was going. So I didn't, it's hard to sneak out of the country. You normally sneak back in. But so I went up on the Friday to play in the Classic Wallabies game on the Saturday. That also became a live site for the Ireland-Japan game.
Right.
To give you an example, it was a bit like playing a game at Coogee Oval against the Japanese old boys. And then that venue became a place where 5,000 people came to watch us, but then watch Japan play Wales. And the place was buzzing. Like the town was pumping. I know you're going up in the quarterfinals for a couple of weeks. The closest thing I can relate it to is probably the 2000 Olympics. You know, when people were just out on the street having fun, you didn't necessarily need to be to an actual game to be getting swept up in the fever of it. I think it's unreal up there.
Mate, just quickly on that Classics game, you guys played a Japanese Classics team and they took it quite literally. Like there was a 77-year-old, correct me if I'm wrong.
Yep, 77.
77-year-old Japanese player playing against you. But how many...
We had Justin Harrison, so it evened itself out.
That's true. How many players did the Japanese have lined up in the tunnel?
So when you come to the tunnel to meet the opposite team, as you normally do, and you go to shake their hands, it was like they were walking out for World War II. There was like 75 Japanese players.
They
just kept walking out the door. And they got younger and they got fitter and they got more aggressive looking. But as it turned out, the first game was against the over 50s and that was like just grab. I was still keen to put some shots on because if you're on the field,
it's your chance.
It's my chance. You know, I missed so many in my payday. But so we played, the first game was just grab and then the next game was live contact and that was played in the best spirits and in the end it was a great day I had.
Someone tells me that perhaps you slotted one from the side.
Well, I think I told you that, Drew.
You asked me to slot too. Yeah.
No, I did just snap one from the side, like 3 metres in, and there's no footage of it, unfortunately. Everyone's talking about Mark Gerrard's 55-metre drop goal from directly in front, pretty decent angle.
You've got to test yourself, Gerardo.
Great time over there. Hopefully we'll get back. We'll wait and see how deep the Wallabies go. But Japan is a buzz.
Yeah, it certainly is. And I'm looking forward to getting up there in a couple of weeks. But now, I know that you're not happy about it, Steve. I know that you're not particularly impressed having to speak to this guy. But time zones are pretty difficult.
Yep.
I've locked him in and I'm going to have to call him now. So are you going to be okay with that?
No. I've got to go and talk to HR.
Really?
Yeah. I'm going to write an email to World Rugby about the refereeing and TMO. So I'll duck out and write this email to the TMO.
What? So I'm doing this on my own?
You're doing this on your own. You can reminisce about all your dates with Gitz and Johnny in Toulon and I'll catch you soon. Say hello to Johnny for me.
All right. Well, okay. Well, while you throw your toys and go outside, I'll I'll give J-Dub a call.
Okay.
J-Bear, is that you?
It is, mate. How are you?
I'm good, thanks, mate. Thanks for joining us in the Fox Rugby World Cup podcast. Unfortunately, Stephen Hoyles isn't with me, so you're just going to have to bear with me today. Is that going to be okay?
No, that's all right. I can handle that.
All right, cool. Well, firstly, we'll just get quickly right from the top. What are your thoughts so far on the Rugby World Cup in Japan?
Yeah, I think it's been pretty interesting. I think there's loads of stuff going on. It's been exciting. I think it's building really, really nicely. I've been closer to rugby than I have been for a long time. I wouldn't normally watch. I found myself watching two or three games in a row, and I'm like, "Geez, it takes me back to my childhood. I haven't done that forever." So it's been brilliant like that. You know, Japan have done a great job already, and especially on the field too. It's keeping it exciting and interesting. And I think we're seeing a big growth in a lot of the teams that would be considered maybe not rugby sort of heavyweights, and yet they're turning up on the field and showing us that the rugby's in a good place in the world. But yeah, some interesting stuff around the laws and tackling and that game on too.
And wait, what's your take on the officiating? I mean, it's been contentious. What's your take on it so far?
I'm kind of glad that I'm not on the field playing now, because you know I had a lot of habits in tackling which were built from trying to express myself on the field and everything. And I think some of the stuff is, it's just so difficult. Some of the stuff looks pretty clear cut.
Yeah.
But some of the other things, they look so difficult. I mean, for me, some of the interesting stuff is with regard to a red card. You know, if I was over on the field when there was a red card, it was always something massive. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Like, yeah.
It's to get a red card. It had to be something massive. And nowadays, because of the new laws and the new information around it for the referees, it means that you can get a red card for stuff which is just quite unlucky. But at the same time, I have to admit, something has to be done about protecting the players. And if this is going to make players think very, very closely about how they tackle and really go deep into technique, then maybe... Yeah, maybe this is the way it was always going to be. You know, to make a change that's going to really look after the players, it might have to look like this. So who knows?
Yeah, it's just a shame that it's on this platform that they're using that. To implement it for not necessarily the first time, but it's having its greatest impact on what is our greatest platform in the World Cup, which is unfortunate. But anyway, we move on. What about in Australia? There's a lot of chat about who should be playing number 10. Out of Christian Leilifano, Bernard Foley got his crack just over the weekend. Matt Tamua came on and looked pretty good as well. Who would you put at number 10 for the Wallabies, given that you're a decent number 10 yourself?
I didn't see the Wales game. I've got it recorded.
Sure.
That's the one I probably need to look at most. But I think from a number 10 perspective, it really depends on what the type of game you're trying to play. And it depends upon how the rest of the players are connecting with that player at that time. And that's not always something that stays constant just because, you played and you've done well in the past, or just because you're the apparent sort of the most informed player. That doesn't always sort of correspond to how players connect you. I know that, as generations changed throughout my career around me, that connection massively different. And because I wasn't able to move with my identity and how I saw the game, it meant I ended up sometimes feeling like I worked in the team and sometimes feeling like I didn't. And I always kind of sort of blame the team. And I think the size of a good number two, which is completely the wrong way around, it was up to me to move and to become a new player. And I really like that in a 10, something that you feel constantly moving and changing and adapting and therefore keeping that connection with the team. So I'd go on what the team's feeling. I think I like Bernard Foley. I saw him in the World Cup 2015, which I thought was, I thought he's exceptional. I thought he's so dangerous. He was like another, essentially he was just a player with no number on his back as well as being a decision maker.
Yeah.
But I also think, Tamua is a really strong individual, looks like he's calm and composed on the field. I think Leofana, I think, in terms of just presence, I think maybe he might be the force at the moment.
Yeah.
At times, I don't know what that feeling is in the camp, and I would have to be there to sense, you know, what brings out the best in the players around him. Because essentially, it's not about your number 10; it's about the 14 guys running off him that make the number 10's performance.
Yeah. Right. Okay. Well, looking ahead, it's looking likely because of the Wallabies' result against Wales. It's looking likely that we may come up against your men, the English, in the quarterfinals. Right. How do you see that one playing out if it was to come into fruition?
Yeah, it's a good one. One of the things I've been finding interesting about World Cups has been that there's certain matchups where some teams just have other teams that they have a certain game which just challenges other teams.
Yeah,
it doesn't matter how well they're playing up until the World Cup. They just have a certain game. I find that New Zealand have a certain game which when they play teams that would be considered ranked quite a long way below them, they just find a way to really get into them. Do you know what I mean? They score the way that you expect them to. But I think even for New Zealand, teams like France and Wales, they have a certain game which for some reason just starts to really challenge New Zealand. And I think Australia and England, they're two of those teams, have always been. I think at the moment, I like the way that England are looking quite considered and composed and fairly sort of, albeit up until certain stages in the game, fairly ruthless, fairly relentless. But I also feel the way that Australia played in that second half against Wales from a few of the highlights I have seen, I sort of feel like they have a certain game that can challenge England, especially around the breakdown. England have been looking for guys for a long time now that can really challenge in that area. But they certainly have an ability to play. We saw that 4 years ago. I think one of the interesting things is just Australia can suddenly come up with a score and they can back it up again with another one.
Yeah.
And that's what maybe, yeah, that is what I think England will sort of find challenging, is teams that not just can afford to score, but are able to score and score again and snatch away the momentum. I think Australia have that. They've shown that in the way they came back, and also in the way that they've managed to sort of, against expectation, they've managed to hold their own in the championship in certain games and show that they can mix it with the best at the moment.
But surely it can't come down to another little pretty number 10 with a drop goal to break our hearts. Surely not, mate.
Well, I did. You know, it's interesting. The Wales game had a couple of them in it, didn't it? And whether it's part of the dying art, I don't know. But how difficult is it? I mean, we'd have found this in France playing together, because the drop goal was pretty heavily utilised in France. But when your team does nothing wrong in defence, you know, off the line out, so I mean, you get up off the line, you make all your hits, you get over the ball, you slow the ball down, you've got both sides marked up, you're on the front foot, you're charging out, and it feels great. And all of a sudden, someone steps back and smacks one over from 40 yards. And you just sit there and go, well, what are we supposed to do?
Yeah.
And when you're on fire, when you've got the form, when you've got the momentum in the game, it hurts. And I think Wales started the game and they started the second half with one of those. And that was clever. It was clever stuff. And I think, yeah, I'd be surprised if a few teams don't just try a few themselves coming out, whether it's us at that time. Geez, it does take some courage to step up and have a crack.
Well, mate, speaking of that 2003 kick, have you done any work with Eddie Jones up until now with the England camp or anything?
I've been working with the kickers for probably, but only unofficially for probably about the last 4 or 5 years.
Well, I was just interested, how was that first conversation with Eddie, given that he was the coach of the team in the final back in 2003? How did that go down?
Yeah, we didn't go there, funnily enough, not straight away. But it's been, my work with Eddie's been sort of really interesting. I'm very clear on what he wants from me, but it's also, and I quite like the fact that there isn't a lot of messing around, talking about going over stuff that doesn't need to be spoken about. Clear, concise, and allows me to get in there and just and have a relationship with the guys I work with that is essentially as a mate, and isn't loaded with the kind of responsibility of coaches in terms of selection or views and opinions. I'm just there on the player's side. And I think maybe he does sort of ask me my opinion, and I like to think that's because maybe 2003 was kind of counted. But to be honest, I suffered at the hands of Eddie in terms of his work with Saracens throughout my rugby club career with Newcastle, just constantly getting beaten and outworked by the team he coached. So there's a mutual respect there. But I sort of love what he's doing with the sport and the team, what it looks like. So if I can help in any way,
mate, I think in the grand scheme of things, your World Cup win in 2003 probably outweighs what he did for the Saracens against Newcastle. But either way, what about that 2003 that night? Tell me you had a big one. Did you have a big one? Did you drink a few beers out of the William Webb Ellis?
Yeah, isn't that what you're supposed to do?
Well, did you?
No. Funny enough, we after the game, there's always the media and the official sort of side of it, which was cool. And then we went to the private party, which was the least private affair anyone's ever experienced in the world of rugby. It was sort of all the supporters had, and good for them, you know, fair play. They sort of got in there and were really enjoying themselves as well. But that kind of meant that I cut it early. And when I was on the way back to the hotel, you know, I was thinking, what do I do now? But to be honest, when I was on the way to the hotel, I was thinking, I just wanted to soak this in. I wanted to try to understand what it was like. And do you know what? Or what it was all about. And the mistake was to even try and think about it. Should have just sort of sat there and just been in the moment, as it was, and instead of trying to work it out. But in the morning, I woke up and it was an interesting experience in the morning, because I woke up fairly clear-headed and maybe had to sort of sidestep some of the carnage on the carpet outside my room and some other things which may or may not have been down to ask God. I think it was probably more down to supporters as well. But everyone seemed to have had a good time, but yeah, I'm kind of glad in the end I had some time with myself during it.
Yeah, nice. Mate, you've spoken a few times about the notoriety that kick brought you, and how whilst you're really proud of that achievement, it was also something that didn't really sit that well with you, the celebrity it brought with you. Can you explain us a little bit about that?
I think at that time and earlier in my career, definitely I had a kind of relationship with it, which was not necessarily love-hate, but was certainly one where I appreciated so much of the interesting areas of life it allowed me to go into, and certainly the challenge upon my character. But at the same time, there was part of it which felt like it becomes slightly suffocating. It's almost like I didn't sign up for this kind of a feeling about it. But now when you ask me over the last, however long, if you ask me now, kicking that ball over and being part of that fabulous side that was able to, to win that competition, it was a neutral event. It was up to all of us to make what we wanted of it, as with everything. And I just wasn't in a space where I had any kind of ability to work with that outlook. And I think what I did have was I was full of habits. And so many of those habits were just reinforcing my self-importance. And as it was, that was the issue, was that I was getting more and more self-important with regard to how I, how I thought I was a success and such a this and that. And then you add an event like that, and then you add a change of external circumstance because of it. And someone who's not willing to change and feels that they're doing the right thing and heading the right direction, and now they can't, you're bound to get a massive conflict and a big sort of contest between me and the world. And ultimately, as soon as I started to let go, I realized that the world was mine all along. I didn't need to fight it.
Well, there you go. What about your world, mate? What's Johnny Wilkinson's world now? I know you're a father. How do you go on nappy duties?
Yeah, I think I'm all right. I don't mind getting shoved to the side, though. Do you know what I mean? I respect those that are better than me. And my wife's definitely one of those. But the life's amazing, and you can sort of probably pick up from that last answer. A lot of my life now is about performance and all those amazing things that come with creating an environment around yourself. So be it performance or leadership or teamwork, or all those things. But actually, at the base of all that, there's only two things that really matter, and that's mental health and physical health. And that's everything I go into, maybe more at the beginning, mental health, because it's just an untapped, I think, relatively untapped area. And a lot of it starts with the idea about it's good to talk, and that is, it could not be more true. It's fabulous to open up and to have that kind of that initial release and relief that makes you understand, one, that you're not on your own, two, that you're not abnormal, and three, that in fact, actually, at that time, it's nothing to do with you. It's not your fault. It's just something that's happening. But the beauty of it is that the future belongs to all of us. And I think that untapped side is what next after that. Do you know what I mean? In terms of being able to create an environment inside yourself that makes for an incredible experience of life. And I think that's my area. I love it. And it's what sportsmen are trying to do. They just want to feel amazing on the field. But so much of the narrative is about how you need to stress and suffer and sacrifice in order to feel that, that amazing feeling on the field. But it doesn't make sense. And what it does is it adds up to so much pressure on the body and so much of a mixed and confused sort of experience of life, which becomes more and more difficult the older you get. I've been desperate to challenge that myself and now try and challenge it on a bigger scale.
Yeah, well, I mean, you've obviously gone through quite a lot, especially in recent years, in terms of challenging yourself and sort of that self-discovery. We've spoken a few times about a potential trip to India. a little bit of self-discovery over in India, mate. Is that still in the cards? Are we still going to go over there and get our meditation on and just, discover a little bit of ourselves or what?
I would love to. India's a fascinating place for me and somewhere I'd love to go. I was actually all booked up to go when I had this amazing change and to my world and my family in terms of numbers, which was brilliant. But I was pretty much on the plane at that point. And the thing I'm very conscious of, like I said, mate, with you, of course, it'd be amazing. I love that. The thing I'm conscious of right now is because it's not something I'm able to do or necessarily want to do right now because of how I am at home. But the thing is that I guess sometimes exploration is kind of almost like something you feel has to be done physically. You have to go further afield. I have to do things that I've never done before and all those kind of things. But actually, it's, whatever you're looking for, it is right here where you are already. And I think I've enjoyed that, but that side of it, but at the same time, it's a place I've always wanted to go, and who better to go with than yourself, mate? That would be a real inspiration.
Mate, some really wise words from you there, Johnny. But before we go, I mean, you talk about a lot of challenges and also, of the serious context. I've got one which is, I find also really quite serious. If England play Australia in the quarterfinals,
right,
you're going to be up there, right?
I shall be.
You'll be in Japan. I'll be there as well. So if they play together in the quarterfinals, I'm challenging you to a sumo wrestle.
Oh, no, mate. It's
In full, it's, proper, no, traditional G-strings, we're getting into it.
It couldn't be more off. there is no way. There is no one more unpredictable than I would like to be in a sumo ring, which is already unpredictable. Double unpredictable, as much as that is a beautiful challenge right now. If you're willing to close the doors, I'm more than willing to go one-on-one private wrestle. Not that sounds a bit off at this time, but mate, we'll have a look when we're out there.
Okay.
So do not tick that box as a kind of yes, agree.
Okay, it's a closed doors, yes. But otherwise, we will lock in a beer and a workout, and I look forward to seeing you out there, mate. But thank you so much for your chat and some really wise words. Thanks, mate.
Awesome. Take care, mate.
Cheers. Thanks, Johnny.
Hey, pleasure, mate.
No worries. Everything's going well?
Splendid. Thank you. Splendid. Right. What about you, mate? That looks like a pro setup.
Yeah, no, it's not too bad, actually. How's Shelley and the little one?
Brilliant. Fabulous. Yeah,
nice,
yeah, life's good. Are you busy? What's the matter going with your side? Everything all right?
Mate, no, yeah, all good. Just busy with the pool games here in the studio, and then I'll be up there for quarterfinals onwards. So we'll catch up for a...
You're going to be same area as me because whatever happens for quarterfinals are definitely going to be in the same area because both are happening.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Well, let's catch up. Perfect. And a bit of skim ball and a couple of beers.
I'm all over it. Are you there until the very end? Are you right?
Yeah, all the way to the end. Yeah.
Well, mate, we'll be pretty much rooming up anyway in the same place.
Well, I'm staying in Giddy's apartment as well. So
nice.
Yeah, we'll all catch up. Yeah.
Shit, this trip I've got planned suddenly taking a very strange.
maybe that can be our sumo dojo.
Oh God, yeah, bloody hell.
All right, mate.
Well, oh no, what the hell am I going to do? Right, okay.
All right, mate. Steve. Well, thanks heaps for the chat. Appreciate your time.
All right, no worries. Catch you soon.
Thanks, Jay. See you, mate. All right, Steve. Yeah, mate, we're finished up. Come in.
Done?
Yeah, come in. Come on, mate, get your mic on.
How was it?
Mate, it was, honestly, I think you've really missed out on a good chat there.
That's okay. I'll listen to it, as I do every week.
Yeah, of course. It's the world's best podcast. But I honestly, like, I got a lot out of that. I've known Johnny for a little while now and had the pleasure of playing alongside him. And I know that he is a deep thinker and he's all about that sort of connection stuff, but he mentioned some really good things, even touched on the mental health and the importance of that and some of the struggles that he had along the way throughout his career. But I honestly encourage you to go back and listen to that.
I will. My only concern is now, how do we top that? Johnny Wilkinson, where do you go to from there?
Well, I'm not prepared to say we're topping yet.
But okay.
I think our next guest is prepared to say that because he's just named a movie after himself called The Perfect 10.
Dan Carter.
Yeah, that's who we're calling.
Okay.
Are you going to stay around for
this
one? I'm
going to stay for Dan. I like Dan. I like Johnny too. I just had to move my car. I did not want to listen to Johnny, but the parking cops are horrendous. I had to move my car.
All right, let's call DC now. Dan, how are you, mate?
Hey, Dan, how are you?
Good. Hey, Steve.
What's going on?
Oh, not much, mate. Just feeding the children.
Yeah, I appreciate your time. I understand it's probably arsehole hour with the kids, feeding time and everything like that. So thank you for taking the time to chat to us.
Hold on. How would you know that?
He has got kids.
No,
he just doesn't support them or follow them.
I just drop in. Like, I'm the ultimate godfather, mate. Like, I just drop in, help with feeding and bath time, and then drop out. So
how many you got, Dan?
Three boys, so it's a bit of a madhouse.
But... Yeah. Wow. Okay. Yeah. Well, thanks for doing this, mate. I know you're busy, so
no worries,
we won't be too long.
Mate, what's your initial thoughts on the Rugby World Cup so far?
Yeah, it's been awesome. Obviously, been playing and living in Japan last season. There was a lot of sort of hype and expectation, and even being over there and, the crazy streets of Japan, just seeing all the foreigners, all the I guess, international rugby fans sort of taking over the country, but then also the success that the Japanese team are having, just how the whole country has gotten behind them. So, mate, it's been an awesome start. I mean, the ABs have only had one game. I think they've got another game tonight, but it's been strange sort of having a 9 or 10 day turnaround between games. So keen to see how they go.
Do you watch it with any feelings that you feel as though you could still be out there doing it, like a touch of jealousy almost?
Oh, it's really strange, actually. So I've never felt that before. So obviously finished on a bit of a high, thanks, Drew, 2015.
Yeah, thanks, mate.
And never have I sort of watched the test match and wished, oh, man, I wish I was playing that. But I was at the opening ceremony and just before the Japan-Russia game, and there was a part of me was like, man, this is why I played the game for, World Cup time at the highest level. And there was a part of me going, where are my boots? I'd love to be out there. It was the first time I felt it in 4 years, so it was strange. But after watching, a few of the games, the impact, the speed of the game, I'm actually quite happy that I'm on the other side now.
Nice. We'll talk a little bit about the All Blacks. So there's been a bit of chat about the 10, having Richie Mwanga at 10, Bowden Barrett at fullback. What's your opinion on that? Like, do you think that's the best combination to go with, or would you play Bowden at 10?
Yeah, it's a tough one. Like, basically, Ben Smith, he's world class. Was one of the best sort of 15s in world rugby. And just, he was struggling to find his form in the early stages of this season. Mm-hmm. And the form that Richie has shown in the last couple of years, especially at Super Rugby level, it was almost too hard not to have such informed players like Richie Mwanga and Bodie out on the field at the time. And unfortunately, that was off the back of sort of Ben Smith not having his best performances. So it's taken a while to get used to that combination because I prefer players playing in their preferred positions. So having Bodie at fullback, initially I was a bit sceptical of it, but the more that they've played, the more they're getting of an understanding of each other, having the sort of dual playmaker role. It's growing on me a little bit. And the last couple of performances, South Africa, actually the Wallabies in Eden Park was another great performance of those two.
Yeah, so, they did all right.
Especially after the week before that, where we got a bit of a hiding. But it's starting to grow on me. So the coaches have made it pretty clear that that's the, what they're, keen to persist with that combination. So I can't see them changing at this stage of the World Cup.
A bit of an off-field question, Dan. Following social media over your years in France and when Gitz and Drew over there, it was almost as if every time they did something that looked really cool, you would one-up them. Like, they'd sit in row two of the Victoria's Secrets fashion parade and you'd go and sit in row one. Was that intentional?
No, they actually gave me their seats. It was kindly, we were up, I think, in the back row, but they've got a few more connections than I do over there.
That is not true. Mr. Louis Vuitton right here himself. But we were literally like, we got our tickets to the Victoria's Secret show and we got ushered to our seats and we're second row. We're like, how good is this? Like, when we saw DC and his wife Honor outside before and had a champagne. And we sat down, there's two seats available in front of us. We're like, how good is this? And the guy that beats us in absolutely everything comes and just sits right in front of us. We're like, come on, mate. Like,
no, don't be like that, mate. There was four seats. We're all together. It was no, us and me. It was like, we're all together.
It's like an Anzac thing, you reckon?
Yeah, 100%.
Same thing happens. We go to the Monaco Grand Prix. We're in like this like really like sweet sort of like, I don't know, VIP area. And then Dan's like, catching Tom Brady's spirals from some boat. Like, it's ridiculous.
Oh, mate, it's just, a couple of good sponsors, really.
Just the Canterbury boy done good, eh?
Yeah, exactly, mate. And actually, probably one of the biggest highlights of all those has been on this podcast. So,
yeah.
Well, mate. Thanks for the invite. I know when you start up a podcast, you tend to go through your contacts list about who's the most priority. And I understood Gitz coming in first, on the podcast, but then sitting behind them, good mate Skucks and Brian Habana. I'm number four on your contact list.
I was a little bit upset by that. We had to build, mate. We had to, like, this is the crescendo. Speaking of, well, this is sort of leading me into my next thing, right? Like, there's a movie out about you right now. Firstly, did you choose the title?
A documentary, firstly.
Well, it was at the movie cinemas, so it's a movie, mate.
Seriously, it's a rugby-made country we live in. Of course, a cinema like Rialto is going to pick up the distributions. Right?
Sure.
I thought it was going to be something for online.
Drew's trying something similar back here. He's not having too much luck at the moment, but he's pushing through with it.
Mine's called Legs 11. Yours is called The Perfect 10. Was that your idea, the name? Or?
When I started playing rugby, I always wanted to make a movie, really. That was my end goal. So the whole career that I've had was just all geared up towards this movie, really. So, I'm getting ripped out by that. I didn't have anything. And, Pitch Productions that did all the productions of it, they were just adamant that it was perfect 10. And I was like, I'm just blowing my own trumpet here.
But you play yourself. I want to ask you a quick question. If you weren't to play yourself and you had to pick a Hollywood movie star, who would you pick?
Oh, I've always been a fan of Brad Pitt after Fight Club.
he's busy filming my movie, mate.
Oh, really? Is he? Oh, he said no to my movie so he can do your one. Is that okay?
Yeah, that's right.
A bit of a man crush on him.
Mate, you mentioned the 2015 final a little bit earlier. It's just one question that's sort of not sat well with me for quite a while. Why was it right at the end that you kicked the conversion with your non-preferred foot?
Oh, it's, a bit of a long story. I know we don't have a lot of time because you said this podcast won't take 5 minutes. Or it's already
Mate, now that we got you, we're not letting you go.
So earlier on in the World Cup, Aaron Smith we were just having a chat and he was like, hey, have you ever had a conversion with your wrong foot, your right foot? And I was like, nah, but I'd love to because my old man used to always make me practice kicking goals with my wrong foot. And he's like, oh, imagine World Cup final, we're up by more than seven, you just kick it with your wrong foot. And I was like, mate, that's a great idea. And then Liam Messam, he ran on the tee and he goes, I'll kick it with your wrong foot as a joke. And I was like, okay. He's like, oh, no, don't. and he started shitting himself in case I missed it. So I don't want to come across like cocky, arrogant, and like I'm sticking one up you guys. So I did it really quickly, hoping no one would see. But
oh, we noticed, you know, Dan. Oh, don't worry about it. We noticed.
When there's like bloody a million cameras on, it's hard to get by. So
yeah,
basically, it was just sort of a tribute to my father.
Sure.
Kick goals.
I got another serious question, Dan, and it's like the All Black success has been. Obviously, it's been phenomenal for 15 years. There was a bit of a lull around the early 2000s where they underachieved. But without the Crusaders form over that same period of time, do you reckon it would have been as successful?
That's a good question, actually. I haven't really thought of that before.
I ask a lot of good questions, Dan. I
yeah,
don't.
I know. I know. You're chalk and cheese, really. I'd like to say yes. You know, but because I don't want to come across sort of one-eyed Cantabrian, which I clearly am, in saying that the reason that the All Black success has been off the back of the success of the Crusaders. So, no, I don't think it has. And I think I'm saying that because the coaching group and the management group that have been together for so long, they are the ones that kind of set this powerhouse of the All Blacks up at the moment. And it started probably 2004, they changed the whole All Black environment and the reason that we're playing for the All Blacks, and they went back to the history, and they changed so much there. And there were guys like Tana Umanga, obviously not a Crusader, Richie, that they came up with this way of how the All Blacks want to live in the future. And that's where it all started. So the success that they're having today, you know, has basically off the back of some of the work that was done way back in 2004, and it's just kind of grown. It's just turned into this really powerful kind of beast at the moment because of the changes that those coaches made. So I don't think it's just off the back of the Crusader success.
Yeah, right. Mate, just there's been a fair bit of chat about the Wallabies and our halves combinations and the fact that we're chopping and changing a little bit. You have been tuning in over the course of the World Cup and perhaps a few of the games before it through Bledisloe. Who, if you were Michael Checker and the selectors, who would you go with?
Mate, I'm a huge Bernard Foley fan, and it's kind of it's breaking me to see his lack of confidence. Like, yeah, he was such a big part of the 2015 and the success you guys had, and he was just playing with such freedom. But he's just really, I don't know, whether he's overthinking things, he's just a little bit hesitant. And for someone like sort of Manny Timor to come on the other night and just be direct, decisive, it just completely changed the game. So it's, you know, as a rugby lover, and obviously I follow a lot of number 10s, to see Bernard kind of going through this patch where he's, I just feel like he's lost that freedom that he used to play with. And obviously Christian, you know, coming on there and, you know, he's had a fantastic year this year. And, you know, I'd say they're probably going to stick with him.
Yeah.
But I just love a bit more competition there. And, I just feel like Foley's sort of overthinking things, and just he's lacking that consistent game time where he can kind of get that confidence back. And obviously the Nines, I think, you know, Will, he's world class. I was a bit surprised when I saw him not starting those Bledisloe Cup games, and he's showing what he can do off the bench as well. So I guess the problem is, you know, they've only got a couple more pool games, you know, that they'll qualify for the quarters.
Yeah.
But they need to just have a couple of, games together consistently to build those combinations. You can't be chopping and changing and still have that uncertainty, which I feel like there is at the moment.
Yeah.
Mate, that's another great answer. Hey, Dan, we want to say thanks very much for giving up your time. I know Drew said it'll be 5 minutes, but it's been about 15, but no, you're busy, and no, it's you don't often do these sort of things. So thank you very much for giving up your time and being so honest with your answers, hey, mate.
No problem. All good. I hope you've got a good editor to make sure put all that together.
No, you've been good, mate. And we'll catch you up in Japan later on in the tournament, have a couple of beers, and I'll put my hand in my pocket and get those ones.
Okay, mate. Sounds good.
All right, mate. Thanks very much for the chat.
Thanks, Dan. Bye, mate.
Great. See you, boys.
Mate, how good was that?
Oh, I'm really enjoying these podcasts. It's like you get to talk to people that you played against and sort of became friendly with. But then the best thing about rugby is when it's all done and dusted, you all just become common ground and you can talk to them about anything, and players open up a little bit more. There's no way in the world you'd get that sort of info from Dan Carter if it was 2015 and you asked him about the Wallabies number 10.
Yeah, I mean, it got a little bit awkward there when he was talking about how far down the list he was on my contacts.
Yeah, but that's, you've got a very long contact list, you know. Yeah. Prince of Monaco, just to name well, one.
Maybe we get him on next. But, I thought that was another good chat. He's got some good insight on, the Richmond Wagga, Bowden Barrett situation, as well as, you know, what we're facing with the Wallabies halves as well.
I liked his answer to the question about Canterbury, because the Crusaders have had so much success. But once the All Black season starts off every year, you don't hear much about him. But I thought he was going to have to say yes. But the fact that he went back to 2004 and told us where it all turned around for the All Blacks, that was good to hear as well.
I mean, I think once you, like, hearing that from DC, it makes sense, right? Because if it was really Canterbury strong, Canterbury heavy, there's always an opportunity to be fractions within that group. And I mean, at least from the outside, it clearly doesn't look like that's the case.
Yeah. Well, we've got a bit to crack into now, don't we?
So we threw out the tweet. This is, I love this segment, Steve.
Yeah, this is my favourite one. It's actually getting so popular that we might not be able to get through all of them. Or if we do, there might be a couple of just really swift replies. I'll let you start.
Okay. Kate Lorimer. The Wallabies penalty goal in the 69th minute to bring them within 1 point. Would you have kicked for touch for a maul try given pressure in the previous 10 minutes, or happy they took the three?
That's Kate, our stats woman. That's Kate from stats, so she knows her rugby. No, it's funny. I would probably say Michael Hooper has shown they're very confident with their driving maul, so where he can sit there and say take the three. The Wallabies side has proven, similar to the Brumbies this year, that they're pretty good at kicking for the line and getting 5 points, possibly seven. So it's easy to be critical in hindsight. Okay, I've got one. We've heard this one before, but how do you feel about G'day Law? Worth reviewing, firstly. We know it's the
Mitchell Law. We said we'd never talk about that.
Yeah, so at the very least, Australian players playing Super Rugby should qualify. Do you feel that G'day Law, Mitchell Law, should allow players to be back in Australia?
Look, I think it's like anything, right? It's going to be fluid. I think it'll change over time. I think there was definitely, it was worth looking at to see whether we make, in a World Cup year, everyone who's Australia eligible to be able to be picked from overseas just in a World Cup year. I think that's certainly something to be considered moving forward. And then also, I think also, you know, if they're playing in Super Rugby, whether it be for a Kiwi team, Sunwolves or South African team, I think that makes sense as well.
Yep, cool.
Same calendar. Okay, I've got one. Matt Hall at CISPT2, whatever. Based on what you are seeing at Rugby World Cup, are you good with 20 teams? Would 16 be tighter? Would 24 be possible? We'll discuss. We are the fun cast, and that is not a fun question.
No, who was that from?
Oh, who cares?
Yeah. Okay, so there's your answer to that. This is from JJ Meritz, and it says, how much, if any, of a coach's demeanour rubs off on the squad, and do you think that the attitude amongst the players could be influenced positively or negative on how much the coach acts in public? This is clearly a question because
it's everyone's seen
Michael Checker blowing up. I've got an answer, but I'll let you go for it first, Drew.
Well, I think we may be of the same opinion. I think it shows that he's going into bat for his team.
Yeah.
Right? So, and Michael Checker, being in his teams before, he'll say, look, don't worry about what I say out there into the press. Like, it's all about what I say in here. He's like, and what he's trying to do, he's building up an us versus them mentality. So it's almost that siege mentality where Michael Checker and his teams thrive, is when they all feel like everyone's against them. And I don't think that it's, I think it's definitely tactical what he's doing.
Yeah, I'm of the same. Like, I like seeing him passionate and emotional. And seen it in the years, the cameraman getting his face and he's pushed the camera out of the way. And as a player, you think, well, he's fired up. I better be.
Yeah.
I better join in.
I mean, I think it's great. Like, we need characters in the game, whether it be players or coaches. It'd be the other way, right? If we had someone coaching the Wallabies who was dull and wasn't charismatic and whatever, we'd be like, oh, this guy's an absolute bore.
You know what I like most about it? Having seen Michael as a player and as a coach when he started, he's always been that way.
He's consistent.
Like, you don't want someone to change just because they're told, oh, you've got a national job, you've got to do this or that. So guess who's back, Drew? Guess who's back?
Oh, the Fritzel.
The Fritzel.
Potato Fritzel.
Fritzel's back. Okay, another random question, but it's a good one. Do we want the Mortlock gloves back in the game? Let me squeeze the second one in and tell me who had the most outrageous pre-game ritual. Drew, do you want to see gloves back in the game?
No.
No, I didn't either. They were horrendous. And we still bag people for wearing gloves.
Although Steve Murphy plays for Tonga at this current World Cup, wears one glove.
One glove, Michael Jackson style. Michael Jackson, man.
Yeah, so he's like only half committing.
Wow. Yeah, I don't like the gloves. Who had the most outrageous pre-game ritual?
I think we've spoken about it.
Yeah, you
Rocky
did.
Elsom.
Rocky Elsom.
Oh, mind vomiting. Yeah, Rocky vomit. Elsom yep. brushing his teeth as we're running out. Yep. Cactus back. Is Ardie Savea going to be even better?
Now that he can
he
see.
Didn't actually say that. He said, is Ardie Savea going to be more dangerous now that he can see in matches?
Yep. If you're essentially playing rugby without seeing and you can now see, you will probably improve performance. But, Drew, you played half your career blind, and I'm not talking from alcohol effects. You do have
images. No, half my career was blind through alcohol. My entire career was blind through...
One eye.
Yeah, vision impairment. Yep. So, yeah, well, I mean, I think it's fantastic what he's doing. And he's not the first guy. There's an Irish guy, McKinlay. Ian yep. McKinlay, I think is how you pronounce it. He was playing in France. Yeah, Macca. The French top 14 wouldn't allow him to play with those goggles initially. So he moved to Italy and he plays over there now. And so he's the pioneer. And
yep.
But it's great to see someone of Ardie Savea's stature doing it on a stage like the Rugby World Cup, because it shows to every, you know, young boy and girl growing up, not even just in rugby, but... You know, it's okay to be who you are. And, yep. and because, you know, for me, I remember I have the empathy of when I heard Ardie Savea talking about how he was nervous about how he's going to be received by his teammates. Because, you know, when I went to school, my mum would go to parent-teacher interviews and she would ask my teacher, so is Drew being wearing his glasses? And the teacher would be like, no, Drew what? Wears glasses? And so, of course, that very next day at school, I was in the front row with my glasses on and, you know, copying it from some of them. My mates, yeah. in inverted commas. So I can empathise with that. Like sometimes the reservation might be that how it's going to be received yep. by people around you. So I think it's great what he's doing. And
I think he's pretty cool anyway. He gets away. You might not have been as cool as Ardie Savea up the front of the class. He's a cool
yeah,
dude.
Yeah, well, I mean, he's got cool hair. I had like a genuine bowl cut. Like it was strong.
From okay, a military family.
I've got one, Chickzilla 84.
Recent, I know this guy.
Recent article said the haka is unfair advantage. I love watching it as much as I do the rugby. I don't see how it can be an advantage. This is a long question. If anything, I would think it should fire the opposition as much as it does the ABs. What's your take on it? And please share your experiences.
I've got absolutely no problem with it. It's a long question.
Yeah, it's a long question.
I've got no problem with the haka. I love that as a kid you wanted to face it. I don't think it gives them an unfair advantage. If it did, Samoa, Tonga, Fiji, they've got the opportunity to do one. Never an unfair advantage. Slightly intimidating facing it. I do think that how they structure the haka is slightly racist. What they do is they hide the skinny white fella up the back of the haka. It is very hard to make eye contact with your Jimmy Cowans, Nick Evans. It is very, very hard to avoid the eyes of Jerry Collins and Soei Ala and the likes.
It's like used to play against Arlie Williams, he used to park himself right at the front right from our point of view.
Yeah, yeah.
And he just looked like a pelican trying to take flight. Like with his big, big, long arms. I've spoken to him about that, but he loved it. Like he just said, I know that I probably looked not as intimidating as perhaps some of his teammates, but he loved it. So there you go, Chickzilla 84.
Okay, I've got a question. I'm going to ask just one of the two questions from Timmy Phillips, big fan of the pod. What's it like being out of form and struggling to make a click? So he's talking about, and says WGBF, look down on confidence. I don't think Willie Genny is down on confidence, but certainly Bernard is down on confidence. Drew, what would it feel like for Bernard at the moment?
Yeah, I mean, I think some of it is, you know, almost like what Dan Carter was just speaking about. Like you almost overthink things and you try and fix everything. You know, in the moment, and that can sometimes snowball it into making it worse. So, look, I honestly think this might sound a bit egotistical, but yep. I always found sometimes when I was out of form and I wasn't quite getting the footwork or the fend out or the bump or
timing,
I would sometimes go back and watch some highlights.
Yeah, it's and positive reinforcement.
It would just show me that I was capable of doing it, and quite often it was against the same opposition, or it was only quite recently that I was in that kind of form. Mm. And yeah, I mean, I wouldn't do it in a busy room.
Yeah.
I'd do it, you know, in my own time, so that you know, no one sort of saw me and could hang shit on me. But
I think it's a lot easier.
Felt that helped me.
I think it's a lot easier for a forward to get back in form, because sometimes it's just about work rate and timing. And
yeah.
I always found like, yeah, you just got to get involved to get back in form as a forward. But I think for players like number 10s, you can overanalyze for sure. But Bernard, if he doesn't get picked this week, and I don't know, the team's come out and he hasn't been picked on the bench.
Yeah.
You know what? He's just got to train really hard.
Yeah.
Stay positive, because there's every chance that he's going to get another run. It could be in a World Cup final, and you just can't beat yourself up. And there's a serious job to be done there. Like if you're not on the side, to make sure you're training hard and you're ready to go, because there's every chance he's back in.
And also that you're doing your best to prepare the team players that is playing. So yep. I've got one here from James Nowland. He's got two questions. I'm just going to hit you your yep. first question here, James. What was your best stitch up on another player? Example, lying about the dress code of an event to Johnny Wilkinson, which we did in France. Yep. But I always liked when we travelled to South Africa, we'd use those zip ties.
That yep. go zzz, yeah.
And then you could only cut them with like scissors or a knife. And also on planes, the one thing you don't have is scissors and a knife. Yeah. So I would always get about 20 extra of those cable ties.
Backpacks.
And I'd wait for everyone to just like get settled and almost not quite go to sleep, but just get settled. And then I'd just quickly pretend I'm going up looking through my stuff and I'd get about 6 backpacks and zip them all together or zip their zippers closed so they couldn't get their laptops out or they couldn't get their headphones. And, oh, geez, I laughed. Like, it made me lol to myself, like, a lot. But I really, like, annoyed the shit out of a lot of my teammates with that.
We used to put our laundry in all together and everyone had a number and we used to find a certain coach in particular. It was John Muggleton or yeah. often a couple of players you'd get. And you'd just go on, as soon as their laundry was put in, you'd fill their training shorts with tissue. So you'd watch them on the training field, just fluff, just flying all over the joint. Used to get you through some dark sessions.
Yeah, the gags. Yeah. How good are they? Yeah.
You're good. Okay. As an Aussie, this is from Ben Gould. Okay. As Aussie fans, the saltiest in the world. Crevy shot, not a penalty for me, but Adam High shot, also a soft penalty. Otherwise, yeah. I thought Poit or Ramon Poit was okay. What are your thoughts? I don't think the referee was terrible. I think a lot of it was TMO interference.
Yeah. Yeah, I also think that from my point of view, we're not sitting here just saying every decision against Australia is the wrong one. I also agree that the one from the winger from the Wales, I think it's Evans. Gotcha. Like that was just confusing because when it came up on the screen, you weren't actually sure who they were looking at, who was infringing, whether it was Sam McCrevy ball running or whether it was the tackle, because it was just not obvious. So I don't think anyone's necessarily sitting here saying that we're the only ones being hard done by. I agree also with the Samoan guys that got sanctioned, but then Piers Francis got off. I just think there's just inconsistencies across all these sanctions and penalties that just make it confusing for the viewer.
Like the Bowden Barrett picture you see now of him
on Cheslin Colby. Yeah.
I'm fine with that. Like people if referees keep seeing these images throughout the week on social media,
they're gonna
and TMOs start seeing it,
yeah.
we're gonna have a game of NFL. It's gonna take us hours to get through a game and the whole philosophy of rugby will die as it is.
I also just think at some point you're gonna be somewhat biased towards your country, right?
Yeah.
So where's that guy from?
That was Ben Gould. Gouldy.
I think he's Welsh.
I think he's Welsh.
Yeah, go back to the valleys, mate.
Yeah, and get some teeth.
Okay. I don't know if you can say that. That's two strikes for you this pod,
okay,
Steve.
Sorry.
Okay, I've got one here. Question, who will... No, we'll move on. You got
glasses?
No.
Okay.
I've got my glasses on, but that didn't make sense.
Okay, this is a good question from Gary Salamander, old Salas, or Manders as they call him. Boys, the island lost to Japan suggests that they are maybe too dependent on Sexton. Any other major contenders too reliant on one or two key players? Good question. Most teams are. That's your
especially in
quarterback.
That position. Yeah. I mean, and you look at Carberry came on for Sexton and didn't do that well. And now, interestingly, he's just been selected at halfback.
Who has?
Carberry.
Really?
And they're hoping that he goes
almost
well
like
at halfback.
A punishment. You didn't play well, mate, so you're going to have to go and run 10Ks and pass the ball 100 times.
Yeah, I don't know. I think, most teams, if you lost your first choice 10, it would have quite a significant impact. But
I think England are a completely different side without Billy Vunipola. I think he's that important. Yep. I don't think they've got the powerhouse in the forwards without him.
I also think Georgia aren't the same team without Levan Chilichava.
Chile, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, yeah. No Chile.
He's had two tries.
Two tries, yeah. Same as Brett Vardza.
Yeah.
You can't lose those fellas.
Chiller.
Next question.
Okay. Dan Wilkinson.
Okay.
At Hot and Delicious. That's his Twitter handle.
Yeah.
Question.
Lives with his parents, 45 years old. Yep.
I'm pumped that the 2019 Wallabies have the second half gas to overpower teams. Are you confident that we can turn it around so that teams don't get the jump on us in the first half moving forward and we play out the full 80? How do we rectify? I like this. This is glass half full.
Yeah.
Right? Like it's seeing that we're finishing games strongly.
Yep.
Our finishers or our substitutes are coming on and having an impact. Now what we need to do is obviously rectify the start. And there's also they've showed at times that they're capable of that as well. So it's just about trying to get that that full 80-minute performance that every team really chases.
Well, here's the thing. You know as a player, no one at game ebbs and flows. There's always it swings back to the other side if some sides have got an advantage. You never get the perfect 80 minutes performance. So New Zealand against South Africa, they didn't play well for the first 25 minutes and they were getting absolutely pummeled, but they were holding yeah. fort and they weren't getting points against them. So the Wallabies don't need to come out and be 10-0 in front, but when you're getting smashed and you're not playing well, you just can't concede points.
Well, that's it, right? It's about limiting the damage when the momentum is against you. And that's what New Zealand, like you just said, that's what they did so well, so that when the momentum swings back in your favour, you're not chasing the game from so far behind.
Yep. Great answer. This is from A Point of Order. That's the name of A Point of Order.
Okay.
How can I listen to the podcast? And actual questions, how good is the world perceiving the referee and Australia's response?
Steve, if he's asking how do I listen to the podcast, he's probably not going to be hearing it on the podcast.
No, but he's asking. That's what I'm saying. This is fascinating. Like, I can't – just stay on Twitter and we'll come back to you at some stage. Like, follow Drew on social media. That's what you got to do. Follow Drew on Instagram or Twitter.
Yeah.
And you'll see how to
– we'll put up the links. We'll put up the links. Otherwise, just look at any Fox Rugby
Get
article.
Online.
It's somewhere in between there.
If Wi-Fi is an issue, just go to Starbucks. That's free Wi-Fi. That's one of the problems.
Yeah, I've got one here. Michael Miller at Sniff Forever.
Oh,
okay. Why aren't Fox commentators mentioning players, club that Western Force players are from? Example: last night, Timmy said Henry Tefu of Samoa, an ex-Queensland Reds player. No acknowledgement of Western Force where he is now. I just think it's probably just been a bit of an oversight. I don't think there's any genuine reason other than the fact that maybe Timmy didn't know, that's all.
Yeah, like there's a lot of players to get through as well, and Henry is a Queensland product, so that's probably why they're talking about it. Like, we'll make sure if there are any other Western Force players.
Yeah, well, going forward, Marcel Braki, Henry Tefu. So we'll try and get it out there. We're certainly not trying to, mention it. Yeah.
Here's another. I know we're the fun cast, but this is a good question, so I'm going to read it out. It's from Brother D78. Says, when will Tier 1 stop recruiting Pacific Islanders in their teams? Also, World Rugby needs to relook the eligibility rule. The reality is you've got to think of the Pacific Islanders and the opportunities they get overseas. And playing in a World Cup means a lot to a lot of the Pacific Islanders, but also supporting a family and building houses for your family back and send them back money all the time does. How does World Rugby relook at eligibility rule? I'm all with you, mate. I think that if players like, let's say, for example, George Smith wanted to play for Tonga in the last World Cup, he should have been able to. There's got to be some type of compensation for players who have finished at the top of one country. Like, there's got to be ways to help the... Because you know what we're seeing? We're seeing the likes of Russia, Georgia, Uruguay all improve, but the teams that aren't necessarily improving is Samoa and Tonga, and they've been proud rugby nations for a long, long time.
Sure. Okay, I've got one here from Steve Lenthal. What defines a good rugby tourist?
I've always thought a good rugby tourist is someone who's flexible in terms of they might not like golf, but they'll go and play golf. Right. They don't necessarily they jump between different groups because in teams.
Yeah.
What do you think?
Mine's more like if you don't like tequila, you'll still have tequila.
That's flexibility.
Yeah, that's true.
Drew, I'm not the world's greatest drinker, but I've had times when I've gone out with you and done it because it's
that's true.
You know, I've had great nights.
Yeah, on the Cascade Lights. I like that.
They're
actually not a sponsor of this pod either.
I've got drunk on Heineken Zero somehow. I don't know how that happens, but I've done it.
Probably me just talking all over you all night. Steve.
I just think, being able to spend time with multiple different groups, and that's...
Yeah, you need to be able to bounce around because there are little groups and within teams. But I think also, someone just adds value at any moment because there are times where on travel days where it's an absolute bore and it's a punish. And
they're the best days, though.
Yeah.
When people get so agitated.
Oh, I remember...
Pokers and prodders get a hold of them.
Adam Ashley Cooper one time, he got me in Melbourne. He... I got my suitcase and I was stroppy. A bit shirty at the time and I grabbed my suitcase off the conveyor belt and I put it down and someone pulled me away. It was all like set up and I went back to and they were like, oh, come on, we're going to get on the bus. And I picked it up and everything I owned came out of my suitcase. And like I was seething, mate. Like I saw red.
The dildo?
Sorry?
Huh?
No, that was
in your carry-on.
That was on my person. Moving on, Steve.
I haven't got any more, Drew. That's okay. Funny. I think that's enough.
Okay, last one. Taylor Brasser at T Brasser 7. Best Japanese whiskey.
You'd know more than me.
Yeah, for me.
I do like my whiskey. I did have, yeah.
Yeah, I used to have dinner at the Giddo's so often. Yeah. Now, because he's up in Tokyo, we try to Skype once a week and share a couple of whiskeys. And he sent me back some nice Suntory whiskey, which is the team that he plays for up there. And the Cheetah, the Hibiki, there's a couple of nice ones. But I think if you stay with the Suntory whiskey, I don't think you can do too too much wrong there. So,
well, maybe you can.
Well, you can if you, yeah, if you stay with it for too long.
Righto, that's a good wrap of all the questions. Great questions.
Yeah, and thank you for sending so many in. And we apologise if we didn't get to yours, but we'll endeavour to do that on our sixth pod next week.
Our sixth pod. I think we're waiting. I think we're speaking to William Webb Ellis and Obama, maybe, or Donald. Who? How can we top Carter and maybe Wilco?
See what Beyonce's up to.
Okay. Is she still texting you?
Like, unbelievably. Yeah. No.
Let it go.
What was I going to say? You just throw me.
Okay. Quick wrapper this week. Wallabies.
I like the team. Jordan Pataia getting his first opportunity with the Wallabies. I think it's great. I think he's the youngest player to ever play at a World Cup, and to be debuting at a World Cup, it's even more special. So,
and he's missed out twice. He's been named twice.
Yeah, it's almost like now they've named him, don't let him train. just put him in his bed.
Yep.
Tuck him in nicely. Feed him if he needs to be fed. Hydrate him if he needs to. But keep that kid in cotton wool until he gets out there on that field. And because he's promised a lot, and we're all looking forward to seeing what he can do when he gets out there.
Yep.
And we wish him all the best and congratulations on the achievement. I also think the fact that Indigenous jersey, I think that's huge as well.
Massive. Yeah. That's great.
Yeah.
Great news. What about this as we're closing off this podcast? Nick McArdle's standing there.
Yeah. He's like a puppy. He's like a puppy at the shops who wants to be bought.
Let me back in, guys. Shut the door. Lock the door.
Yeah.
Hey, Nick, how you going?
Good.
Yeah.
Mate.
We'll call you, mate. We'll call you. We're just about to wrap this podcast. I just want to say a nice little shout out. It's a sad shout out. The passing of Jeffrey Linnetsau, Wallaby, New South Wales, Randwick legend.
Yeah.
For those who don't know him, he, in my opinion, was the greatest rugby man alive. Club legend at Randwick. You'll see a lot of stuff in the next couple of days about his passing. But he was a guy who gave absolutely everything to the game of rugby and the club Randwick in particular. The nicest, or probably the fairest way of summarising Jeffrey is his wife, Lorraine Lowell, passed away about a decade ago. Jeff and Lowell never had any children. But I would say there's probably 1,000 people that at some stage in their life counted Jeffrey as a father figure. And I love the bloke and I'm really going to miss him. I know you, Drew, short time you were down at Randwick.
Yeah.
He had a infectious personality, a way with life, and everyone loved him.
Yeah, there wouldn't be anyone that's ever played for Randwick that doesn't have a story with interacting with Jeffrey Sale. And he would have shaken the hand of every player, and he's been every game where he's been physically able to be at. And it's not just the impact that he's had on Randwick, it's also the Shoot Shield, his involvement in New South Wales rugby. I believe he played one cap for the Wallabies as well. So, like, he's just a huge figure, and our thoughts are with him. But he's going to be a man that's loved forever. So, it's not, I don't know. How do we finish?
Oh, look, it's bittersweet, you know.
Yeah.
It just reminds you of the reason why you love the game of rugby. We've got plenty more coming up. We've got two more huge pool games. Work out where the Wallabies finish in their pool, who they play. Will it be England? Will it be France? Will it be Argentina? This is the best podcast we've done, Drew. I don't know if we can get any better, but I'm going to strive to be better.
We might drop the mic and just not do any more after this. Or we'll try and endeavour to do better. Yeah. And tell your friends to listen, because we've only got about 8 listeners at the moment. So
1,000.
No.
Heaps more than McArdle.
All right. Thanks very much. That's the Fox Sports Rugby World Cup podcast on our fifth cap.
See you, gang.
I hope you enjoyed it.